Yeah, I went to the audiologist recently and she was like, you have perfect ears. Like she kept saying I had perfect ears. And I was like, you're just like complimenting me now. Like, please keep going.
Yes, because that's what doctors need to do. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, Making Today Make Sense. While we brag about ourselves a little bit on this podcast is what we do. Good to have you here.
Yeah, I'm Marielle Segarra. I have perfect hearing for anyone who wants to know. And I am also a super smeller. It is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? And that means it's time for us to answer questions from listeners. Today we're kicking things off with a question from Greg in California. He writes, for several months, the Dow and the NASDAQ have been moving in opposition to each other. If the Dow is up, the NASDAQ is down. I don't recall a period like that before. Is it coincidence? Is it an indicator?
Well, so look, first of all, it's a good question, right? Because it's always good to know what's going on in the markets, even if they are not the economy. And most of the time, the three major indices, and also the Russell 2000, if you throw that in there as well, they move mostly in tandem. And I'm talking over, you know, over time. But on any given day, they can go different directions. And here's what's going on. They're completely different indices. First of all, the NASDAQ composite has like 3,000 something companies in it. A lot of tech heavy stuff, right? Google, those other big tech companies that you know and love and maybe hate. And it is a market cap weighted index. That is to say, how much each company is worth on the open market. Remember, market capitalization is outstanding shares times the share price. That depends on their influence in the market, right? So companies that are worth more move that market more. The Dow is 30 lousy companies, right? Often called the blue chips to represent different sectors of the economy. It's historically based. It's been around for 125-6-something years. And it is a price-weighted index. That is to say, the companies with the higher share price move that index more. Home Depot, McDonald's, you know some of them. They do different things. They are designed to do different things. And so if they move differently on a day-to-day basis, that's fine. Usually over time, you will find they move mostly together, that and the S&P and the Russell as well. So there you go. That's today's market tutorial.
So there's no big like take-home message or meaning behind the fact that they're moving in opposite directions.
No, I would not be alarmed if over, you know, even a week or a month or longer, they move differently day to day. But over time, the general trend in the markets, they all mostly move together.
Gotcha.
So there you go. All right. Let's see. Voice memo. About 5G from Brian in Arlington, Virginia.
I have a question about the story that 5G cell service may interfere with airplanes landing. Is the interference real and how does it work? And does it impact all airplanes or only some of them? So anyway, I'm wondering if you can get into that a little bit. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So to answer Brian's first question, yeah, the interference is real. And for those who may not have heard, Verizon and AT&T had plans to roll out expanded 5G wireless service last week. And then that rollout was delayed because the FAA said the band of radio spectrum that those carriers had bought was too close to the band that's used by radio altimeters in thousands of planes used across the country. Now, first of all, Kai, can you tell me, am I saying radio altimeters correctly?
It's altimeters. And the altimeters. Thing you need to know, altimeters, right? And the thing you need to know about this instrumentation in airplanes, aircraft have two kinds of altimeters in them. One measures barometric altitude. That is to say, based on the pressure of where the airplane is, right? Because the closer you are to the surface of the earth, the higher the atmospheric pressure is. If you go to altitude, it is less, right? So you have a barometric altimeter, which measures pressure based on where you are in the air column, right? Up and down. And that's just absolute from mean sea level. So that will tell you how far above the mean sea level you are in that area. And barometric altimeter settings vary. I don't want to get too far down in the weeds, but you have to actually set that in the airplane based on where you are and what the weather is. The other instrumentation that aircraft have that is at issue here are what are called radio altimeters, sometimes radar altimeters. And the way they work is that they bounce radio waves down from the aircraft to the surface, and it will tell you how far you are physically above the nearest Earth. So if you look straight, if you're on top of Mount Everest and you're flying at 31,000 feet and you shoot a beam straight down and Mount Everest is 29,000 feet tall, it's going to show you 2,000 feet above terrain, right? And that instrument, and if you're, you know, at LAX and you're at 2,000 feet above terrain, you're, you know, 2,000 feet above the dirt. That matters when you're approaching and near land, which is to say on takeoff and, more importantly, landing. And that's why the airlines and the FAA is concerned about the sale of the 5G spectrum, because those radar altimeter frequencies are close to the 5G frequencies, and that's what matters. Sorry. Did
so
I
is this dangerous?
A lot of information there?
No, yeah. Like, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah. So, look, if your radar altimeter gets jammed by frequencies that are in use for 5G, if you're near LAX or airports in the Northeast where the radio spectrum is really crowded, that could be a really, really, really big deal. There are ways that you can technologically get around that. You can put filters on aircraft so that they will filter out those things. But the question is, what's the safety factor? What's the margin of error? How willing are you to not put at risk, but to narrow the safety margin of aircraft in some of those crowded airspaces. And it's a real deal. There's a little tiny part of me that says, oh, man, you remember when you couldn't use your, you know, cell phone to surf the web when the aircraft was taxiing and you had to close it as soon as, you know, the aircraft door was closed? And that turned out to be nothing. I think this is more substantive, but there are technological ways around it, and that's what they will wind up finding, I'm sure. I'm completely sure.
So I'm wondering, like, yeah, where they are right now, because they say the FAA, like, has said that Verizon and AT&T need to pause this rollout, but they also announced these buffer zones around 50 airports in the U.S., where the altimeters may experience interference, like LAX, LaGuardia, O'Hare. So is that already the case then? Despite, like, even though the rollout hasn't happened, that if you're flying into those places, like on your flights, there
might be... No, because 5G is not really out there yet, right? So it's not really a risk yet. The risk comes with the 5G rollout, and that's why you know, there are these buffer zones around these really big and crowded and heavily instrumented airports, right? Because the reason you need it is when you're flying on instruments and you can't actually, you know, you're flying to LAX most of the time and you can see the ground and you're fine. But sometimes there's fog, and sometimes on the East Coast there's snow, or up in Chicago, right? And it can get really tricky, and that's why you need your instruments, not the least instrument of which is the one that tells you where you are as you approach the ground.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It's very helpful to have a pilot for this question.
Yeah, I'm happy to be of service.
Okay, well, this next question is also going to be kind of geared towards you.
This is Rachel calling from Boston, Massachusetts. I was really confused that this number had a Boston area code. But anyway, I was just wondering about, what the deal is with bonds. I know I got one when I was a child from my grandfather that was appreciated in like 10 years, and I cashed it out, and I was like, cool, money, because I was probably 13 years old. But that's the end of my knowledge of bonds. So if you can get into that, that would be great. Thank you.
Wow. All right. So I'll try to do it reasonably quickly. But first, is that 508 number? Is 508 a Boston area code? I guess that's
So actually, I can answer this part, because I asked Bridget Brodner, like, why is it a Boston area code? And it's apparently just a Google Voice thing. Like, you can pick a random number, and that's the one. I mean, I chose a New York area code for my Google Voice number, but you can also just randomly have them generated.
Do people still use Google Voice?
Oh, yeah.
I guess so.
If you don't want people knowing your actual, like, cell phone number, you can have your Google Voice forward to it.
Huh.
But then people know you gave them the Google Voice number, because, like, when it answers, it's like, this is the Google Voice number for Mary Elsegara. You know, like,
Yeah. Huh. Learn something new every day on this podcast. All right. So, bonds. Well, look. It's a 15-minute podcast, of which we've got like 5 minutes left. But the very short version of bonds is this. Companies and governments, whether they be the United States government or the government of Japan or the government of your local county or sometimes your school district, whatever, they need to borrow money to operate. And the way they do that is they sell these things called bonds. The most popular one that we talk about on Marketplace all the time, it's the benchmark U.S. Treasury bond, the 10-year Treasury note, right? But, you know, there are overnight bonds, there are notes, and all of these things that go out to 30 years from the government. And you can buy corporate bonds at whatever denomination, whatever, right? The basic functionality is this. They say, we want to sell you a bond. And you say, okay, here's $100. And they give you a piece of paper that says, you have lent us $100. And at the term of this bond, at maturity, whether it's 10 years or 30 years or whenever, we will give you $100 plus X percent interest, right? Today, the interest on a 10-year treasury note is 1.74%. So if you buy that 10-year treasury at $100 in 10 years, when that bond matures, you will get $100 plus 1.74% compounded over a bunch of time. That's the basic functionality, okay? Bonds do trade. You can buy bond mutual funds. You can buy bond. There are 1,000 different ways to invest in bonds. They can be really tricky. They're not for the average mom and pop investor, unless it's grandpa buying you or you buying for yourself to hold over a period of time these securities, because they're incredibly safe, right? Government bonds specifically are incredibly safe. If you lend the government $100, you're going to get your money back plus all that interest. Same cannot be said for all corporate debt. Let's be clear, there are junk bonds, right, which pay higher interest. The more risk you bear, the longer time that you have to, that the government holds your money, the more interest they have to pay. But fundamentally, it's an IOU. Here's $100. We will owe you $100 plus 1.74% over 10 years. That's what it is. And that's it. That's bonds in like 90 seconds. Yeah.
That's great. Super helpful.
There are various permutations and combinations.
Just like play it on repeat.
Yeah. That's right. All right. One last one. Here we go. Max in Santa Cruz. Go.
I've just begun my first full-time job search, and I've noticed an annoying trend. Some companies don't list any kind of salary information in their job postings. How is this acceptable? Mm-hmm. It seems like just a sneaky tactic to underpay entry-level workers. Please make me smart on this. Thanks.
Yeah, it is sneaky, huh? Yeah, this is very true. It happens because employers can. Most are not required to post salary information in their job listings. That is changing in some places. Like New York City Council just voted to pass a bill that would require employers with more than 4 workers to have in the job listings the salary range. And the new mayor has until 2 days from now to veto that or approve it. And then some other states have laws like this, like in Nevada, in California. They're all a little different. But yeah, I mean, there's a thought that this could go a long way to close the pay gap, especially for women and people of color. And because studies have found that in states that outlaw pay secrecy, wage gaps are reduced. And specifically, there was one from 2015 that dealt with the wage gap for women. Because, I mean, think about it, right? Like, if you don't know what the salary range is, you're going to take a guess. And I don't know. I guess studies have shown that, like, men tend to ask for more. Then also, well, men, if you have...
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, if you have... If you've already been discriminated against in your salary, and so like what you're coming in with is lower than what a man might be coming in with, like you're just going to not know to ask for that much. You're going to not know how much people are even getting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's all about asymmetric information, right? Because I'm sure it's happened to I'm not going to say almost all, but a whole lot of women out there, I'm sure, have had this exact thing happen to them. And it's asymmetrical information, right? The company has all kinds of salary information and data. And you, as the job seeker or the successful job seeker, have limited information. And so this is just an attempt at transparency and getting rid of some of those inequities in the workplace, which affect, you know, by gender and race and all of those things. Yeah.
And I think it actually saves people like a lot of time because if you post it, because like there have been jobs before that I thought looked interesting. And then you go through some of the interview process. They don't want to tell you what they pay until the very end. And you're like, that's less than I make now. Like, what a waste of time, you know? I think it's helpful to have a range. Like, what are we talking about here?
Yep, totally. No, that's absolutely right. Pay transparency is a huge deal. It's a huge deal. Okay, so we're done on a Wednesday. Back tomorrow for Holiday Hot Shell Thursday. In the meanwhile, send us your questions. Let's build that bank up after the holidays, shall we? MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org or voicemail works, which I now know is a Boston area code, 508-827-6278, 508-UB-SMART. There we go. Google Voice, how about that? Today's episode of this podcast, Make Me Smart, was produced by Marissa Cabrera and Mark A. Green. Charlton Thorpe engineered. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie.
Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez, who I miss very much, composed our theme music. And our senior producer is Bridget Bodner. I want to be clear, I miss both Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez, not just Daniel Ramirez.
One does wonder if they listen. I imagine we'd hear about it if they did.
Oh, probably not.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Back tomorrow.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.